It was also possible that the demons of Little Pueblo didn't exist at all. According to Jubilee and Wicklaw, no one had seen one of these critters and lived to tell about it. Someone locked in a concrete prison without food would surely starve to death in a couple of weeks. And if there were no guards down there, no one went in to see what had actually happened, the death could be attributed to anything, even to demons. The trouble with legends, Ryan thought, was that they were 90% bullshit, and the rest was pure crap. Less than 2 hours later, Pilgrims Dennison and Artis appeared in the corridor with the half-dozen guards who rousted the prisoners from their cells at gunpoint. All but the hanged man who lay on the floor, one end of the bandage tied around his neck, the other to the chain that held up the bed, his face the color of a plum pudding.
Now that's a man who really wanted to die.
A guard pulled Jubilee to her feet and shoved her out into the hallway. She moved woodenly alongside Ryan, her eyes red from crying, her face white and drawn. She knew what was coming. She had witnessed it before. And now it was happening to her. A nightmare come to life. They started up the stairs.
Are we gonna get a last meal, Pilgrim Artis? I'm feeling kinda hungry.
Hey, you are the meal, Dimmy.
Ryan didn't think it was all that funny. He was hungry too. With the exception of the blinded man, the wounded climbed the stairs without help from the guards. None of them struggled because they knew it was useless. When they reached the foyer, Ryan saw light through the front doors. It was nearly sunup. A beaming Pilgrim Plavik greeted them as they stepped through the doors and onto the landing. On the street below, the entire ville had turned out for the big show, close to 150 men, women, and children, dressed in their best sackcloth. They were no longer hiding their weaponry. The men and some of the older children carried blasters.
You see them?
No. Christy and Mildred are nowhere in sight.
Comes a time when each of us must go into the darkness and answer the final question. For some, that time comes sooner than others.
With a sweep of his arm, Pilgrim Plavik indicated the assembled prisoners.
Today is their time.
Praise Bob, praising it!
We will walk in solemn reverence as a whole and united people. We mount the noble crest to trace the sacred line between desert and paradise, between heaven and hell, and give living offering in the name of Bob and Enid, that this place might prosper and that we might be safe forever.
Pilgrim Plavik clapped his hands in syncopated time and pranced about, dipping his shoulders this way and that, and cutting agile 360s. The villefolk did the same. Everybody danced. When the prisoners were forced down the steps into the street, the crowd made way for them, but continued to clap and sing. Once more, Ryan noticed the conspicuous absence of oldies. The reason was clear to him now. No one lived long enough here to grow old, even if they followed the rules. When their work slowed down or they got hurt, they got dumped in the dam. They got dumped while still alive, to serve the greater good. Until that awful private moment came for each of them, they were damned happy to join together as a community to celebrate the misfortune of others. Damn glad they weren't among the wounded being helped into a four-wheel car for a last tour of Little Pueblo and environs. Ryan, JV, and Jubilee were pushed and kicked to the front of the mob. Behind them, four men took hold of the cart's yoke and began to pull, even as the others pushed it from the rear. Chanting their adoration of Bob and Enid, the crowd left the edge of the square and started for the dam en masse. They walked at a steady, leisurely pace past the washed-away neighborhoods toward the silos, the lush green fields, and the shining lake.
Looks like we're going to find out firsthand what those demons are all about.
JB glanced back at the street, overflowing with people. Most of them armed.
No way are we going to get rescued. It'd be suicide for Jack and Doc to even try. From here on, we're on our own. Hands tied behind our backs and chucked into the pit.
Just like old times.
It took them 20 minutes to reach the shore of the lake. And when they got there, the procession turned right, walking in the lee of the enormous sloping wall of smooth white concrete. Standing there naked in the light of the day, vast and windowless, the dam did not look like a prison or a giant's tomb. Ryan couldn't see any evidence of a crack. Where the dam ended, an old road bed, a remnant of the project's construction phase, angled up on the canyon side. The crowd chanted and clapped all the way to the top.
Turn here!
Ryan and JB turned at Plavik's command and started down the paved road that ran along the dam's crest, supported by the massive concrete piers that framed the overflow gates. To their left was the verdant valley of Little Pueblo. To their right, for as far as they could see, was Beige Hell. Beyond the dam, the canyon grew wider and wider, opening onto a blasted plain that stretched all the way to the horizon. At the far side of the spillway, Plavik made them stop while three pilgrims used long pry bars to lever up and slide back a steel manhole cover from the middle of the road. Inside the three-foot-wide hole, Ryan could see what looked like rungs leading down. How far down, he couldn't tell. Plavik stepped behind him, and he felt pressure between his wrists. Then, his hands were free. Ryan turned to see the pilgrim holding his beloved Panga, edge up.
You'll need your hands to climb down. Cut the other one loose.
Right.
Pilgrim Dennison cut JB's bonds, then Jubilee's. The others started pulling the wounded from the cart.
I've lived with that blade for a long time, Plavik. Always figured on dying with it.
Sure. Why not?
Plavik hitched up the hem of his robe and unstrapped the leg sheath. He slipped the panga into the scabbard and handed it over. 10 blasters held steady aim on Ryan's head as he fastened the sheath to his cap.
It won't do you any good, you know. Not down there.
Ryan looked in the hole. Standing next to it, he could see 10 rungs on a flat wall before everything faded to black.
There are blasters down there, too, if you can find them. But guess what?
What?
They won't do you any good either. Light the torches!
Torches were ignited and tossed down the hole. Ryan listened for the sound as they hit bottom. It took a long time.
Someone has to go first. Do you want to choose, or shall we do it for you?
I'll go first. Then comes Jubilee, and JB comes after her.
Right, Ryan.
The hole awaits!
You think this is over, Plavik, but you're wrong.
Oh, you mean you'll be back?
Plavik threw up his hands, arching his bushy eyebrows in mock surprise. To the sound of their laughter, Ryan eased himself into the hole. The rungs were made of tubular steel, and they hadn't corroded. As he climbed down below the level of the road, he could see that the vertical channel was much bigger than the manhole opening. A rectangular passage. Looking over his hip, he saw the dim light cast by the heaped torches far, far below him. He climbed down a few more rungs, waiting for Jubilee to get started.
Take it slow, Jubilee. Keep your eyes on the rungs. Don't look down. You'll be fine. I'm right here. I won't let you fall.
She didn't say anything, but she didn't freeze. She started putting one foot after another, one hand after another. JB came after her.
Watch your speed, JB. Don't step on her hands.
Yeah.
As they worked their way down the sheer wall, they could hear the wounded men being forced through the manhole above them. As they descended, the light from up there got dimmer, and gradually the light from below got brighter.
Ryan, can you see anything down there?
Nothing's moving in the light.
Outside the ring of light, there was only black. It seemed to take forever for them to reach bottom, but they finally did.
Wait a minute. Hold it there.
Ryan pulled out his panga and crouched, ready to fight. When nothing attacked him from out of the gloom, he picked up a torch and held it high overhead. There were tunnel entrances to the right and left of the rung wall. The one on the right led back through the heart of the dam. When Ryan turned the other way, straining to see more than 10 yards down the corridor, he noticed the torch smoke was flowing along the ceiling, driven by a faint breeze to his back from the direction of the spillway. For the moment, at least, there was no danger.
Come on, Jubilee. Come on down.
He helped Jubilee negotiate the last few rungs. JB dropped beside them. He bent and grabbed one of the torches.
That's one hell of a long climb.
Must be close to 200 feet.
They looked up as the tiny spot of light up there winked out. The Villefolk had pulled the manhole cover closed. Everybody who was supposed to be inside was inside. They couldn't see the other four prisoners descending. Their torchlight didn't penetrate that far. Wicklaw appeared out of the darkness, moving very slowly. Ryan recognized him 30 feet up by his injured, foreshortened foot. The bandages were seeping blood. There was fear in the ex-pilgrim's eyes, fear and hate as he stepped to the ground. Fear of his new surroundings and hate for Ryan Cotter, who had put him there. He stooped quickly to claim a torch. Wicklaw wasn't the only one bleeding. The exertion of the descent had reopened the shotgun pellet wounds of the next man down. Blood streamed from holes in his right biceps and forearm, dripping from his fingertips. He picked up the last torch with his good arm. The third man was right behind him, favoring the arm inside that had taken a load of Gren shrap.
Brewster's coming. He's moving real...
Ryan lunged forward, grabbed the man by the back of the collar, and jerked him off his feet.
Hey!
Suddenly, a falling body crashed to the concrete beside the rungs. Blood mist sprayed over them all.
Fuck!
Wicklaw spun away, but not too far. Ryan held his torch over the still form. It was the blinded man. Broken open like a watermelon from head to crotch. Either he had panicked and lost his grip on the rungs, or he had decided to go to end it all. Wicklaw mopped the side of his face with a cuff of his robe.
Bastard got the damn thing over with nice and quick. Couldn't face meeting the demons blind.
Why'd you let him come down the wall last?
I figure it didn't matter. With no eyes, he was bound to die first anyway, huh?
Well, you almost came close second.
JB looked up and down the identical tunnels.
What do you think, Ryan? We've got a little breeze coming through from that direction.
I noticed. It could mean there's an opening of some kind outside, but the wind currents are tricky to figure. A giant honeycomb like this has temperature and humidity differences from top to bottom and side to side. It could be pushing the air around all on their own. If there is an opening, it looks like it's way the hell on the other side of the dam. The opening might be 100 feet up. At least it could be. You got a better idea, JB?
Nope.
Then we'd better get a move on.
Wicklaw blocked their path with his bulk and outstretched arms.
You two are crazy. There aren't any ways out. This place has been sealed since the days of Bob and Enid.
If you want to stay here, that's fine. JB, me, and Jubilee are going. You others can come with us or stay. It's up to you.
We'll come.
Suit yourselves.
Wicklaw moved out of the way to let them pass, his face twisted into a scowl. He stood alone with his torch for no more than 2 seconds before he hobbled after them, groaning each time his bad foot hit the ground. The service corridor's ceiling was lined with pipe and bundles of electrical conduit. The walls were blank concrete and curved slightly to the left, following the bend of the dam. As they walked into the light breeze, Ryan started to pick up an unpleasant mixture of odors. Rotten meat, latrine, swamp gas, bear pit. Faint at first, it got stronger. And stronger still.
Smell that, JB?
How could I miss it? Damn nasty.
Maybe we shouldn't be going this way. Maybe we should turn back.
Whatever it is, partner, it's been dead a while.
The source of the stench was a small pile of debris that lay beside the right-hand wall. Covering their mouths and noses with their hands, they approached it. The light of 4 torches reflected off the pool of liquid in which the debris sat.
Bones. Those are human bones.
Ryan and JB had seen corpses galore, but never quite like this. The flesh and internal organs appeared to have dissolved into the liquid. The stubs of the plundered ribcage and the points of the hip girdle stuck up from the pool of yellow slime. The skull was missing. A wad of fluid-soaked rags, presumably the victim's clothing, lay to one side, along with a completely skeletonized leg and foot.
Demon's work. Bob and Enid protect us.
Damn, that stinks. Burns, too, up inside my nose. Better not touch it barehanded, Ryan.
Right.
Ryan searched the floor for an alternative. At the base of the wall, he found a foot-long scrap of heavy insulated wire and poked it into the liquid. When he pulled it out, the fluid stuck to the end, sagging in a long, wobbly strand. He poked the wire deeper, testing the pool's depth. He felt resistance after 4 inches, and when he pressed harder, the wire sank in another couple of inches.
Looks like some kind of acid. Eats through the meat.
When he prodded the rib cage, the bones crumbled and fell into the puddle.
It turns the bones to mush. Looks like it's eaten down into the concrete, too. There's a depression where the stuff is sitting.
Where did it come from?
Well, if Mildred was here, she could tell us.
I'm glad she's not here.
It came from the demons.